Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
It is only Wednesday, but it has already been a hell of a week for Jalen Ramsey and the Jacksonville Jaguars. Let's go back to Sunday. It all started then. Ramsey and head coach Doug Marrone were up in each other's grills on the sideline. Then one day later, reports surfaced that Ramsey wanted out of Jacksonville and asked for a trade. Then yesterday, Jalen Ramsey met with the media. Now that in and of itself to me is interesting. Like, I don't know how many teams, upon learning that their best player wants out, would have that very same player up at the podium 24 hours later. But that's exactly what the Jags did, and that's exactly where Ramsey was. And he was doing some work now. He opened things up by saying this.
Yeah, I know it's a lot going on in the media these past couple days, a lot of speculation, and nobody's really heard from me. But yeah, I wanted to talk as soon as I could today, just because I don't really want it to be a distraction for my teammates getting ready for a game on Thursday. And right now I'm still a part of the Jacksonville Jaguars, and I'm happy about that. And I'm getting ready for the game as well. And that's where my focus is.
All right, so he comes out and says, there's been a lot of talk in the media for the last couple of days, but you need to hear from me. And so now he's got my attention and my interest. But then he starts to talk about what he's talking about. And for a moment, there was a part of me that thought, this is going to be a total letdown. There's going to be a whole lot of corporate talk and not a lot of Jalen Ramsey. You know, the Jalen Ramsey who came into the NFL as a rookie and less than a month into his career called Ravens wide receiver Steve Smith, quote, an old man. Actually, correction. After he and Smith got into it on the field, he went with this full quote.
He came up to me after the game. You feel me? Y'all tell me who got and who had. You're an old man acting like that.
Quote, he's an old man acting like that.
You're an old man acting like that.
He's an old man acting like that. Like Steve Smith was too old to be talking junk. Now, you know, this is maybe the biggest Steve Smith house ever. Steve Smith is one of my favorite athletes in any sport ever. But even I had to respect the audacity of the rookie calling out my guy, saying he came up to me after the game. You feel me? Y'all tell me who got in whose head. He's an old man acting like that.
You're an old man acting like that.
He's an old man acting like that. So, at that point, Jalen Ramsey gets my attention. And that, of course, was just the beginning. Then there was the time he called Josh Allen trash. Quote, then there was the time he called Matt Ryan, quote, overrated. Then there was the time he said that Joe Flacco, quote, sucks. That's the guy that I wanted to hear from yesterday. That's the guy that I was waiting on. And fortunately, that's the guy that we got. He said that if you think that trade request is only because he does not love the city of Jacksonville, you're wrong. He loves that city, and the city loves him back.
Just last night, I was in Roof Chris. They were showing hella love.
Quote, just last night, I was in Ruth's Chris, and they were showing hella love. Now we're getting somewhere. Of course, you were at Ruth's Chris, and of course, they were showing you hella love. You're Jalen Ramsey. They're not. What else you got, playa?
Ever since I've gotten here in Jacksonville, since I was drafted here, I've done nothing but give the city my all. I think everybody knows that. I've gotten some really good years out of me. And for however long I'm going to be here, I'm going to continue giving my all out there. All I care about is winning, man. Everybody know that. I want to win. Straight up.
All I want to do is win. Bleep. Straight up. And then he offered up a quick apology.
Excuse my language, but everybody know that. That's who I am. That's that passion, that fire, that heart. That's what y'all love. You feel me? And I'm going to continue giving that as long as I'm here.
Man, he's right. That is what we all love. Keep on giving that. And a little context here, because you heard that, but you couldn't see it. He was not smiling when he said that. He was dead serious. He was locked in. Locked in and telling you exactly how he feels.
I have nothing bad or negative to say at all about anybody in this building. Happens. It is what it is.
He then capped off that opening statement. And by the way, that was the opening statement, by saying that his focus was on getting ready for tomorrow night's game, being a good teammate, and quote, just being Jalen, man, at the end of the day, end quote. And again, that was all in the opening statement. When the floor was then opened up to questions, he was careful and he was polite in sidestepping most of them, but you didn't really need to hear his answers to know how he feels. The guy wants to bleeping win, and he wants to get paid. He wants to win, and he wants to get paid, and neither of those things are happening. And it doesn't look like either of those things are going to happen. Of course the guy's pissed. He's playing for a team that has gone 3-13 in its last 16. And it's no secret that he's been frustrated with the contract situation for a while now. And not just his contractual situation, but others as well. He's been lobbying to get his teammates to get taken care of too. And that hasn't happened. So, from where I'm sitting, granted 3,000 miles away, but from where I'm sitting, it does not seem to me that it's only about money. I mean, that's part of it, of course. But I'm guessing a big part of this is the fact that he knows he was a single play away from the Super Bowl in 2017. I mean, did that really happen? Were the Jaguars really ever that close? Were they really a play away? Or was that like a dream? Because everything that has happened since then has been a nightmare. They went from nearly beating the Pats in New England and reaching the Super Bowl to having a worse record than the Miami Dolphins in the past 16 games. And there have been multiple complaints about how that defense has been run. Then you've got that blow up with the head coach Doug Marrone during Sunday's game. So you know what it comes down to, right? It comes down to a simple choice. Marrone or Ramsey? Who is more valuable, Jalen Ramsey or Doug Marrone? The Pro Bowl corner or the sub-500 coach? The guy with a legitimate claim to being the best corner in the NFL or Doug Marrone? The guy who can transform an entire defense and a guy you build around or Doug Marrone? The guy who is one of the most exciting and entertaining players in the game or the guy who's had a losing record in both of his head coaching gigs? Listen, I'm never looking to get somebody fired. I'm never looking to take food off somebody's plate. But if the decision really is that, between Ramsey and Marrone, the answer better be Ramsey. Marrone's chased that playoff run with a 5-11 disaster and an 0-2 start. The team has imploded. This guy's going to have to turn into Vince Lombardi in the next 3 months to justify even bringing him back. And I know teams don't want to give players all that power. It scares the hell out of them. But if this really is a battle between Ramsey and Marrone, and you pick Marrone, then you've said that you don't care about winning. The question now is whether or not that legendary red ass in the front office is going to see it that way. Times are a-changing, Tommy. You better too. Jalen is the future, not Douglas.
Just last night, I was in Roof Chris. They were showing hella love.
Bruce Feldman. Bruce, so good to have you back. How are you?
I'm doing great, Jim. Always good to be on with you.
You too. Great to have you back. So a huge weekend of college football, starting with Utah-USC Friday night in Los Angeles. Bruce, a lot of different storylines on that game. USC already lost their starting quarterback for the season. They're coming off a loss to BYU on Saturday. So where are the Trojans right now as a team?
It's going to be a great question. We're going to find out. I mean, there was so much enthusiasm about how true freshman Keaton Slovis played when they lit up Stanford 2 weeks ago. I think what we saw was a couple of things from that. One, Archer had Stanford week one against Northwestern. They're really banged up. This is not the Stanford team. I think most of us have come to know them in the last decade. I think they're going to be lucky to get bowl eligible. I mean, that same Stanford team that USC whooped, they got blown out by UCF. So take that one, that performance, to some degree with a grain of salt. And then when BYU did some things differently coverage-wise, Slovis really struggled with his decision-making. So how much does the new OC, Graham Harrell, get him settled down? Because now they're going to play a much tougher defense, more athletic defense in Utah. And I think right now, this USC team, the whole program just needs some good things to happen, because there has been so much pressure and so many of the buzzards swirling around this program about Clay Helton's future and everything there. I mean, they definitely have some talent. They have a bunch of big-time receivers and some good young players on defense, but there, you wonder about the leadership necessarily in the locker room. Who steps forward in this? And I think we're going to find out a lot, because this is a really physical, tough team that Utah's bringing in here. They haven't won in Southern California against USC in over 100 years, so there's that hanging over them. So this is a really interesting matchup to see what we get from both teams.
Utah, top 10, they're 10th ranked. They're at USC Friday night. Hey, Clones, what do you want when you're craving protein or you need more energy? Not bars, not sugary snacks, not even an energy drink. What you want is beef, pure and simple, beef. So where is the beef? It's in a package of Old Trapper beef jerky. Old Trapper is not your father's jerky. Shriveled, dry, tasteless. No, Old Trapper beef jerky is made from lean strips of steak, quality spices that are smoked over a real wood fire. It's tender, it's tasty, it's not tough. And why is it so good? Because Old Trapper is a 50-year-old family business known for its relentless commitment to quality. They take smoked beef so seriously that you can taste it in every single bite. Old Trapper is packed with protein. It comes in four amazing flavors to satisfy all your cravings. Quality smoked meat at its finest that goes wherever you go. To the game, to the gym, to the beach, anywhere at all. So look for Old Trapper in the Clearview bag. You can see the quality that you're buying. Look for it in major retail stores near you. If you don't see it, ask for it by name, because no other jerky compares. Old Trapper, what's your beef? You mentioned Clay Helton, Bruce Feldman, my guest. So you've got USC AD Lynn Swann resigned earlier this month, which increased speculation about the future of Clay Helton. Bruce, would you say that Clay Helton is coaching for his job at this moment?
Absolutely. I mean, look, you could say he's been coaching for his job since the start of this season. I think that's true. But I think right now there is almost no margin for error left because of just the pressure there on him. I think there's a lot of power brokers around USC who have never been all the way in on Clay Helton being the head coach. I think there are people who genuinely like and respect him as a man, and I think all that can be true. I just think there's a lot of people here who are thinking, I'm just not sure this is the right guy for this program to lead them forward. And Lynn Swann, I mean, I know the semantics on it. Lynn Swann was forced out. It was not a good run as an AD. He had no experience in that role, and it showed. And so now the new president at USC is going to make some big changes. And I would imagine any AD who she's going to end up hiring, who they're going to hire there, is going to know that they're probably going to have to make a coaching change. Barring an amazing run that USC would go on, I think it's going to be hard for Clay Helton to convince whatever doubters who are in the decision-making role and have influence there to change their minds about it. And I think this is about as big a must-win as you could get, because if you look at it this way, this is the best team they're going to play in their division, which is not a great division in college football in the Pac-12 South. If they don't win this game, it's going to be hard to get to win the Pac-12 South title, because it would go through Utah. And I think that just puts even more pressure on Clay Helton to get this done.
We're talking to Bruce Feldman. All right, so Bruce, part of the significance of this game is the fact that the pregame show is going to be live from the LA Coliseum, and your colleague Reggie Bush is one of the analysts. It's going to mark the first time that he's gone back to the Coliseum since the NCAA ruled the USC had to permanently disassociate from him. What do you think that's going to be like when Reggie goes back to the Coliseum?
Yeah, I think it's going to be really emotional for a lot of people. I mean, for a lot of folks, look, there have been Matt Leinart certainly was a great quarterback there. Matt will be there. He won a Heisman there. You know, Carson Palmer before him also won a Heisman. There's been a lot of great players who played under Pete Carroll. Reggie Bush was a iconic, he's a USC legend. And I think for the first time coming back, I think it's going to be really interesting to see how much the fan base responds to it. Because I can tell you this, just from working with Reggie the last couple of months, I worked with a bunch of former NFL players and former college stars. I've never been around another former player who elicits the kind of wow and awe from current players the way Reggie Bush does. We go to Big 12 Media Days and you run into players and they look at him on a different level than they look at anybody else. And a lot of these kids were like 4 and 5 years old when Reggie played at USC. So I think there is a mystique to him because of the way he played. He was such a he was as close to the human highlight guy as you're going to get in football. I know that's a basketball term, but there was a wow factor with him. And so I think for a lot of fans, especially USC fans who feel like, you know, it's been kind of underwhelming, save for the Sam Darnold moments, you know, of the last 5, 6, 7 years, Reggie Bush represents an excitement that was different. And I think you're going to see a lot of that reflected when people actually get to see him, because quite honestly, a lot of the USC fans and a lot of the USC people even in and around the program feel like the NCAA went way above and beyond what it should have done and how they punished USC. And so I think to some of them, to many of them, Reggie Bush, you know, it represents something in that light, too, of how the NCAA kind of screwed them.
Bruce Feldman, my guest. So USC, Utah, big night, obviously, a really interesting matchup from a number of different standpoints. Bruce, before I let you go, maybe another topic or two. That Friday night game is followed by a couple of really big games on Saturday, starting with Michigan at Wisconsin. How big is this game for Jim Harbaugh in Michigan?
It's a huge one. If you look at what Michigan's schedule sets up, it gets rough from here. Now, they had their hands full with a pretty good Army team a couple of weeks ago. They had a bye week. The offense has been a little shaky. They've been sloppy with the ball. I think they need to see Shea Patterson, who's the quarterback, who's got a bunch of experience. Now, he's been banged up a little bit. He did not look very sharp. He did not take care of the ball well. They're going to go on the road to play a Wisconsin team that has been dominant, hasn't given up a point yet, but they haven't played anybody. So, if Michigan wins this game, I think we'll start to see Michigan get some momentum. They're going to get their all-conference left tackle, John Runyon, back. That's a big plus for them. That should shore things up. But right now, I think if you're a Michigan fan, you're going, hey, I'm optimistic, but I need to see more from them than I've seen so far. And maybe the bye week will help settle them down, because this is going to be a tough place for them to play against a Wisconsin team that has just looked dominant so far against limited competition.
I would agree, Bruce. I think Michigan has not shown very much, and Wisconsin so far has looked great. They both had 2 weeks to get ready for this one. It's a big one. Bruce, Oklahoma is coming off that 48-14 beatdown over UCLA in the Rose Bowl. If we go back, Bruce, when Lincoln Riley took over for Bob Stoops at Oklahoma, everybody who knew Riley respected him a great deal as an assistant. But is there any way that anybody could have expected the level of success that he's had so far?
No, I think that was a great hire by Bob Stoops and OU. Look, I did a big story this week on The Athletic about the run game. Everybody was skeptical of, oh, Lincoln Riley coming from East Carolina to be the offensive coordinator. They're going to be this pass-happy offense because that's what Mike Leach does. And it seems so counter to what is Oklahoma's DNA. Well, the secret weapon in there is one of Riley's assistants, Bill Biedenboe, the O-line coach, who's a co-offensive coordinator. And they have such a physical running game with so many adjustments off it. So you couple that run game with a great collection of receivers that Lincoln Riley's able to get, and obviously all these one transfer quarterback after another. Now there's Jalen Hurts, who's not quite as fast, but he's fast, but not quite as fast as Kyler Murray, but he's a 220-pound physical punishing runner who breaks tackles. It's a lethal combination, especially the way Lincoln Riley calls it, you know, to balance out this run game. I mean, it's been pretty remarkable to see. And this is a team that had to replace 4 offensive linemen from last year, in addition to the Heisman Trophy winner. And they look every bit as dangerous as they did last year. And now I think the key to this going forward is Riley hires Alex Grinch to come in and be the defensive coordinator and hopefully change the mindset and get them to play really tough defense. And that's been lacking in Norman, Oklahoma for a while.
Hey Bruce, really quickly, I'd love to get your thoughts on Chip Kelly. He went 3-9 in his first year at UCLA. There were flashes of turning it around, but they're off to an 0-3 start this year. Exactly what's going on with Chip Kelly and UCLA, and how concerned would you be if you're a UCLA fan?
Jim, I think it's a lot of just been such a culture shift from the way things operated under Jim Mora to how Kelly runs things. And I think the reason why they've been sputtering a lot on offense, right now the offensive line has been just off. You know, there's a miss block here, a miss block there. And I think one of the things we're seeing is they don't get a lot of explosive plays, which is one of the things that they were so dangerous when he was at Oregon. So even if a thing is blocked well, maybe it becomes a 20-yard play for UCLA. Well, when they had those dynamic athletes at Oregon, that 20-yard play might be 70. And I think you have people on their heels where right now they're just not that crisp. I don't think they have a great collection of leaders right now in terms of some of the young guys whose maybe personalities aren't ready to rally the troops if things aren't going great. So it's been a little bit of a imperfect storm of just things that are kind of going sideways. I do think it's going to click, but right now they're a really young team and they're really inexperienced, and I think they're just kind of really having some ugly growing pains, and you have a lot of guys who are adapting to a new system at the same time, and I just think the timing is off right now. But I do think at some point this season you'll start to see it click a little bit. But at this point, man, they are struggling, no doubt about it.
It is another big weekend of college football. He's a reporter for Fox Sports and FS1, also an author of The QB, The Making of Modern Quarterbacks. Once again, 10th-ranked Utah at USC Friday night, 9 p.m. Eastern on FS1. Bruce Feldman, my guest. Bruce, great to have you back. Thanks so much. Have a great weekend.
Always a pleasure. You too. Thanks, Jim.
Sign up and be an O Rewards member today and earn 1 point for every buck you spend. Receive your rewards twice as fast and on the go when you provide your email address. O Rewards members get $5 back for every $150 they spend. It's fast, it's easy, it's free, and it's only at O'Reilly Auto Parts. See store or orewards.com for details. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better parts, better prices every day. This just in, Carolina Panthers quarterback Cam Newton is injured. Actually, that should not be breaking news on any level at all, but somehow it is. Somehow that is a breaking news story. If you've been paying attention, there is nothing shocking about any NFL quarterback being injured right now. In fact, it's all the rage. It's the most dangerous place in the NFL, being under center or in the quarterback room. Because 2 games into the season, here is a brief list of the quarterbacks who are already out. Nick Foles, collarbone. Ben Roethlisberger, elbow. Drew Brees, thumb. Sam Darnold, mono. Trevor Siemian, nearly severed leg. Andrew Luck, retired. In other words, it is a bad time to be a franchise quarterback. Yesterday, Panthers GM Marty Herney told the media that Cam Newton aggravated his foot injury in Thursday's game. Really? No way. Man, talk about something coming out left field. I had no idea. You mean that shell of Cam Newton that we saw trying to play through pain on Thursday night was not as healthy as the team made him out to be? You mean the former MVP who was missing wide open receivers? The former MVP who was rushed for a total of -2 yards on the season isn't right? Crazy. Are you telling me that when everybody was told after that game Thursday night not to worry about Cam's foot, that it turns out that his foot is jacked up? No way. Amazing. This guy's in a walking boot this morning, and according to reports, is dealing with an aggravation of that midfoot sprain that he suffered in the preseason. And from the sound of it, the team is getting Kyle Allen ready to be the starter this weekend. So, not only was he not as healthy as the team made him out to be, but when asked about Newton's status for Sunday's game against Arizona, Herney said, quote, "I don't know. We'll just take it day by day," end quote. Man, I gotta be straight. I am blown away. I am blown away by this. No, I'm not. 2 points right here. Number one, the Panthers are 0-2 and potentially looking at their franchise quarterback being out for a while, which means it's getting really late, really early for the Carolina Panthers this season. And then depending on how the next game or two goes, they better think long and hard about how they handle his return. because you know he's going to want to get back out there as quickly as he can. He'll want to be out there early and probably too early. There's not a more tired stat in all football than the one about teams that start 0-2 making the playoffs. Jerome Bettis, being from Detroit, cannot believe how tired and how much talk that gets. But the Panthers were already in a hole, and that hole is getting bigger. And the questions they're possibly facing might not be only about this year, but about next year and the years beyond. This is about protecting Cam Newton now, something they have not done very well. The fact that he's been pummeled over the years is one of the ways they have not protected him. And then there's how that injury situation has been handled since Thursday. Of course the guy was hurt. Everybody who saw that game Thursday night knew that Cam Newton was not himself. Everybody knew he was carrying something or multiple things. Which is why I said during the game, I'm no doctor, but I don't need to be one to know this guy's not right. We all knew. Everybody knew. So we need to start having a serious conversation about that right now. Like, I know teams don't want to be honest or upfront about injuries. They want to hide injuries. They don't want to reveal injuries because they do not want the opposition to get any kind of advantage. But when you don't talk about injuries, even after the game, and when you tell everybody that Cam Newton is healthy and he has a game like that, then everybody's going to kill Cam Newton and say he sucks. If the team says he's fine, he's fine, there's nothing wrong with him, and then he goes out and he plays like that, then everybody rushes in to say he's washed up. He's a shot fighter. And then all the blame goes to him. Like somehow it's his fault. When in fact, he's playing while he's injured. This was my take that night. This guy's not right. This guy's not right. He's hurt. You know he's hurt. And if he's healthy the way the team says he's healthy, then frankly, he's not the player he used to be. But he was hurt. Cam's not going to tell the world how badly hurt he is because that's not the way he's wired. He's going to keep going out there and battling and fighting, even with that bad shoulder and even with a busted foot. But when the team doesn't say anything until 5 days later, that's 5 days that his rep has been getting battered. 5 days that he's been called overrated. 5 days that he's been called washed up. 5 days that he's been called shot, empty. It's not fair to the guy. So as the Panthers start to deal with the injury, they should do something that they have not done before, or not nearly enough of. Protect Cam Newton. Protect this guy in every way possible, on and off the field. I know the guy wants to be out there. But running out there while he's banged up is one thing. But running out there while he's banged up and telling everybody he's not is another. It wasn't a question of whether or not that guy was hurt, but rather how badly. And now both his body and his rep are battered. And the Panthers look like they're circling the drain 2 games in. You know, for who, for what? For who, for what? The guy's out there doing whatever he can when he's not right, and the team's like, oh, he's fine. He's good. Shoulder's fine. Foot's fine. He's fine. Ron Rivera was asked about all this.
Kind of go through when you found out about Cam and what your...
I found out after the game that his foot was sore.
At what point did you talk to Ryan and find out a little bit more information, and how did you guys sort of arrive at the decision that...
Well, for the most part, we got the rest of the information today, and I can tell you no more than what Marty told you, to be honest with you guys.
Ron, did he do physical therapy over the weekend, do you know?
To the best of my knowledge, yes, he did, and he was with a trainer for the most part all week.
Do you know if he was around here or Atlanta or some combination?
Well, he was getting his treatment this week.
Did he have to undergo X-ray, MRI?
I don't know all that details as far as that stuff's concerned.
Ron, as far as time out, do you know how long?
I have no idea. I have no idea. What he's going to do is he's going to get his treatment, and we'll see how he feels, and we'll adjust it as we go through it.
Man, that's song and dance. That's song and dance about the head coach and the star quarterback and the media. Hey, coach. Did he undergo an MRI? Hey, coach, were there other tests? I don't know anything about that. the head coach doesn't know anything about whether or not the former MVP franchise quarterback underwent or needs to undergo an MRI? You didn't ask about that? You know nothing about that? Why would I know and why would I ask? Why would I have any concern about the health of my quarterback? I mean, I understand that there is a song and dance that goes on here, but how about I don't want to get into that? How about I really don't want to discuss that right here? But I don't know. I don't know anything about that. But you don't talk to your trainers. You don't want to know about the health of your quarterback. You don't want to know whether or not he needs to undergo an MRI. They'll just get around to telling you that when it's time. Like, la la, I don't want to know about Cam. Hey, guys, I don't know any more than you guys know. And as soon as I know, you'll know. Hey, do any of you know if my quarterback needs to undergo an MRI? Can any of you tell me if it's his foot or his shoulder? Because I don't know. Nobody tells me anything. I'm the head coach. When we come back,
I don't know all that.
Robert Klemko joins us. SI NFL columnist. Robert Klemko is my guest. Robert, good to have you back. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you, Jim?
Good, good. Listen, there's lots to discuss in your reporting on Antonio Brown because it's very thorough. It's very well reported. There are more than 24 interviews reviewing police reports and so on. Before we get to the content itself, when did you start working on this piece and what kind of thoughts did you have going in?
You know, about 20 days ago, we got an email from a tipster in the, I guess you'd call it the athletic training community, who said that he knew of a couple people who had worked for Brown and hadn't been paid. So we reached out to those people because we thought it was interesting that, you know, somebody who is worth over $60 million is allegedly not paying debts. So then we started calling folks, leaving messages, talking to lawyers, and then slowly but surely, lawyers started getting back to us and connecting us with new clients and clients that were filing suit against Antonio Brown for debts as low as, you know, $2,000. And one woman who declined to file suit said that he stole a painting worth $700 from her foundation. And then through that woman, we were connected with the artist of the painting who had this story to tell about Antonio Brown walking up behind her naked as she painted in his home.
We're talking to Robert Klemko. All right, so let's talk about that for a minute. In June of 2017, he hosts a celebrity softball game, and it's to benefit a Pennsylvania nonprofit. At the event, which also included the auction, one of the items to bid on was that portrait of Antonio Brown. So, like, starting right there, Robert, what did he think of that portrait, and then what did he do after connecting with the artist?
Right, so he sees this portrait at the celebrity softball game for auction, and somebody buys it for $450. And it's of him catching a football, and he says, no, I want it in my house. And he offers to pay $700 for it. And he takes notice of the artist, gets her phone number, and then contracts her $1,000 a day to come to his home and paint a second piece that's a mural of him on his wall. And in the second day, you know, after flirting with her and her not returning it, he walks up behind her while she's on all fours with a small hand towel covering his genitals, and she ignores him. She tries to change the subject. She continues painting, and then when he realizes that it's going nowhere, he fires her and declines to pay the $700, the original $700, for the painting. So this charity is out the $450 they would have got to benefit children in literacy that this other guy would have paid. And Antonio Brown has the painting and won't pay.
Robert Klemko, my guest. Robert, it seems utterly absurd that I would even follow that with this or even say this. But I've been on Twitter. I see what people think. I see what people say. So I'm just going to say this. There might be people listening, incredible as it seems, who would say he was simply messing around. He was just having some fun. It was a prank. What would you say to that? And did the artist feel like it was a prank?
Yeah, you know, the reason that she wanted to talk about this, and you know, we reached out to her. She was kind of resolved to not talk about this ever again. And she never told police or anything because he never touched her. But the reason she wanted to talk about this is because, you know, an unfortunate reality of her job and a lot of people's jobs out there is that, you know, you get hired to do a certain thing, and then you figure out at some point that the person that hired you is only interested in having sex with you. And so she's, you know, painting this mural, and he's promoting it on Instagram Live, and she thinks she's about to, you know, have some success in her career. She's a struggling artist. And then she turns around and she sees Antonio Brown naked, and she says, oh, that's what this was. So, you know, if you think that's a joke, I recommend not trying to pull it off.
Robert Klemko is joining us. So she is not pursuing charges or remuneration on the matter. As you point out, she really didn't even want to talk about it. But when you couple this with the lawsuit filed by his former trainer, Brittany Taylor, is there a pattern emerging?
You know, the reason that she even heard about the Brittany Taylor case and the alleged rape case, because she's not a football fan, is that friendship that she had told about the Antonio Brown incident back in 2017 saw the detail of Antonio Brown coming up behind this woman and ejaculating on her back and remembered her story because the beginnings of it were similar. You know, it's not up to me to say that there's a pattern there. There's certainly a pattern of debts owed by Antonio Brown everywhere he goes. I mean, you know, from $2,000 to a guy who installed piranhas in his home, and then Antonio Brown allowed them all to die, and the guy had to come after midnight and clean them all up, to $38,000 to a chef, allegedly, who Antonio Brown suggests, or who suggests Antonio Brown made a mafia-style death threat against his life, and the chef thinks it was just a way to get out of paying the bill. There's definitely a pattern of Antonio Brown mistreating working class people.
We were talking to Robert Klemko. So, Robert, there have also been reports that there were months of communication between representatives for Taylor and Brown as it relates to a possible settlement. So the lawsuit was not a surprise to Brown's camp. Through anonymous sources, the Patriots have tried to make it very clear that they did not know anything about Brittany Taylor allegations before they signed Antonio Brown. What's your reaction when you hear that?
Well, let me just say that I don't know, you know, for a fact either way whether Robert Kraft knew or Bill Belichick knew, but I know that Drew Rosenhaus has had a lot of clients go through New England. He has clients on the roster right now. He's going to have draft picks there. He's going to have free agents go there in the future throughout the rest of his career. So, you know, for most people that look at that who know how Rosenhaus operates, who just know in general how the NFL operates, to think that Belichick, at the very least, wouldn't know that this was coming down the pipe, that there was that there may be a sexual assault lawsuit against Antonio Brown before he signed him, it's beyond the pale. I just don't see it happening.
Robert Klemko is joining us. I agree with you. Now, when the lawsuit became public, the Patriots released a statement that issued the following, quote, "We take these allegations very seriously. Under no circumstance does this organization condone sexual violence or assault," end of quote. So if they did know before signing him, Robert, what does that say about the Patriots? And if they didn't know and still decided to play him days after this came out, what does that say about them?
Well, you know, I think that if Rosenhaus did disclose this thing and they were, you know, fully briefed on this entire thing, that he probably made the argument that this is something that they could easily beat, that there's not a criminal charge pending here and that we have the goods to make this go away at some point. If they didn't know, which I don't think is true, then somebody in their security department needs to get fired because it took about 4 phone calls to find, you know, a bunch of these people who are alleging misconduct against Antonio Brown. And there are more than just Drew Rosenhaus and Antonio Brown and Darren Heitner, his lawyer, who know about the sexual assault lawsuit. You know, we heard about it from assistants, former assistants of his, videographers, who all were aware of it before it came out.
You know, as you write also, quote, "Brown's run-ins with police became stranger and more frequent over the past 2 years." End quote. For example, in April 2018, police came to his house on 3 consecutive days for incidents that allegedly involved the theft of a bag containing $80,000, throwing furniture from a 14th-floor balcony, and the theft of his Rolls Royce. Robert, like, exactly what happened during those 3 days?
Yeah, I mean, your guess is as good as mine. Antonio Brown goes down to Florida, and all hell breaks loose. You know, it speaks to kind of the fear of having him on your roster throughout an entire offseason. I think that what the Patriots are hoping to get out of this situation at the best is a season of Antonio Brown on the field and then the ability to cut ties with him and not be responsible for anything he does after he gets a paycheck and he's in the Miami area.
We're talking to Robert Klemko for a few more moments. Robert, like, as you point out in the piece, his childhood is a topic that does not get talked about very much. Based on your reporting, what was life like for him growing up?
Yeah, man, I think it was hard. You know, like a lot of guys in the NFL, he had it hard growing up in Miami. He dealt with intermittent homelessness, was kicked out of his home by his stepfather, lived with high school coaches and teammates off and on, was described as somebody who gravitated to authority figures that he respected and was somebody who needed to lean on mentors like assistant coaches in high school and coaches and chaplains in college in order to stay on the straight and narrow. The kind of scary thing is that when you talk to some of those people now, which I did for the story, they say that, you know, they've lost contact with Brown here in the last 3 months. And they think that something is going on in his life, something deeper here that hasn't been reported that's affecting his decision making.
Yeah, to that point, I want to own this and I want to be honest. Like, I used to have him on this show quite a bit earlier in his career. He always showed up. He always did a nice interview. He was always a bit of a character. And I've always said, you know, we really don't know these people. We certainly do not know these people based on what we see on TV. So based on your reporting, has he changed over the years, or is this who, in effect, he's always been?
You know, teammates in Pittsburgh say that he really did change over the course of his pro career. And a couple of them ascribed it to, you know, getting more and more money, getting wealth, becoming comfortable financially. Your guess is as good as mine. I mean, you're absolutely right. We don't know these people. And I didn't interview Antonio Brown. I just talked to a bunch of people that know him and dealt with him at different stages of his life. I think there's a lot more to this story, and we've just begun to scrape the surface.
You know, Twitter is not the best place for objective and thoughtful responses. I think we know this, especially with a powerful writing and reporting. But I'll go ahead and ask anyway, what kind of feedback have you received on Twitter for this piece?
You know, I think a lot of Raiders fans and Steelers fans are really relieved that he's no longer on their team. A lot of people just, like me, kind of find the circumstances bizarre that somebody that's worth this amount of money would behave this way. Kind of the most disturbing thing is Patriots fans who think that we ran this story as some sort of vendetta against the New England Patriots, some sort of effort to hurt their Super Bowl chances. You know, first of all, these things take more than 5 days to write. And I turned this in 5 days after he signed with the Patriots. And second of all, the Patriots are probably going to the AFC title game, whether they have Antonio Brown at wide receiver or some Division III lacrosse player at wide receiver. So the idea that we're trying to tear down the pass is ludicrous. You can't tear down the pass.
You know, one more thought when it comes to working on pieces like that. The last time you came on, we talked about that powerful and disturbing piece that you wrote about Kellen Winslow Jr. This piece also is very, very heavy. What's it like for you to work on pieces like this?
You know, I think you just have to approach them really carefully and approach the individual people that are involved really carefully, because you don't know what people have gone through and at what point in their life or what experience they had with this subject that you're writing about. So you just be very cautious and try to assure people that you're going to present their story the way that they, you know, the way that they're happy with, the way that they intend, the way that's fair. You know, when you go into a locker room after a football game, it's pretty straightforward. But when you're knocking on random doors and calling random phone numbers, it's a little more complicated, but definitely more challenging.
He is a football writer for Sports Illustrated, good friend of the program, and you want to see this piece. It's up on SI.com right now. Thorough of investigative reporting about Antonio Brown. Robert, really nice job as always. Thank you so much, and great to have you on this show.
Always appreciate it, Jim.
Hey, Jim Rome here. When you want expert advice, you go to a pro. Now, some folks might consider me a pro at sports, and as a pro at sports, here is some simple advice that might help you out. When you're hitting the sports book and a buddy of yours tells you he's got a quote, sure thing, you want my pro tip? Run the other way. There is a reason why these casinos pop up from the ground just about every single week in Vegas. That is, there is no such thing as a sure thing in sports. And when you're looking for pro tips on vehicle maintenance or repair, look no further than O'Reilly Auto Parts. Whether it comes to replacing your battery, getting advice on proper car maintenance, or even just getting the best bang for your buck, their expert team can help you out every step of the way. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. Now, if you thought that the New York Jets were done losing to Cleveland on Monday, then you do not know the New York Jets. Because if there's a way to still be losing a Monday night game on a Wednesday morning, the New York Jets will find it. Sure, they were embarrassed at home in primetime. Yes, their offensive mastermind was exposed in that game. Yes, their self-aggrandizing defensive coordinator was humiliated in primetime in front of all of his peers and the rest of the world. But you know what? That can happen. That can happen to any team at any time. Only the Jets, though, could take this to a new level by benching their Pro Bowl safety, Jamal Adams, and then having that spill over into social media, allegedly. Here is what we do know happened on Monday night. In the fourth quarter, Adams picked up penalties on back-to-back plays, offsides, and encroachment. He was benched for the final five plays of that game. A nationally televised game. They benched him for the final five plays. Because that's cool and that's smart. That's what you want to do. Bench your best player. I just had a flashback to bench the salt.
Bench the salt.
Bench your best player.
Bench the salt.
Let's talk about what's going on here. We're talking about Jamal Adams, a guy who had missed a grand total of 14 of nearly 2,300 career snaps that he could have played in his career. So what I'm saying is that guy does not come off the field ever and takes a lot of pride in that fact. It doesn't matter how much his team is losing by. It doesn't matter how humiliating the loss. This guy wants to be out there battling in a game that's as violent as football and playing the game as physically as Jamal Adams does. He's missed 14 plays, but you're going to bench him. And not only bench him, but according to Adams, not explain why you're benching him.
You know, obviously, man, I don't really know why or what was the reason. Obviously, I made a penalty, usually, and they took me out. So I'm not upset. I am upset that I wanted to finish the game, but I obviously didn't finish the game. But it is what it is. I made a bonehead mistake. I anticipated wrong, like I said. And I mean, one thing about me, I'm always finish the game regardless. It doesn't matter what's going on. I'm out there to hunt, and that's just how I am.
I mean, how much worse does it look and sound when you hear that from him on WFAN? I don't know what's dumber, benching that guy or not explaining why you benched that guy. Awesome. Way to compound an already extremely embarrassing and humiliating loss, fellas. Couldn't have found that any worse. Right when you think you can't look any worse than you do, you raise the bar even higher. I mean, that really is amazing. Benching your best player in a primetime game with the entire world watching, the entire team and organization have already been humiliated. So why don't we just single out our best player and humiliate him even further before calling it a night? Good call. Really, really good call. No, great call. You know what's stupid? Your D coordinator taking a run at Odell Beckham. That's stupid. Taking a run at your best player on the opposing offense is moronic.
Odell who?
But taking a run at the best player on your own defense is galaxy brain moronic. I mean, exactly what kind of a message are you looking to send other than some fake tough guy message? Because that's the kind of thing that's going to have a ripple effect. And it seems like that ripple effect includes the bio on Adams' Twitter account. According to NFL.com, the bio that previously read, and I quote, former LSU All-American defensive back for the New York Jets. That's how it used to read. Now, if you look at it, it reads, quote, "Let the Lord fight your battles. He hasn't lost one yet." In other words, he stripped out the reference to the New York Jets. It's out of his bio. And I can't say I blame this guy on any level. Would you want to be associated with the New York Jets right about now? I sure as hell wouldn't. If I played for the New York Jets, I would not tell anybody. If I played for the New York Jets right now, I wouldn't want anybody to know. This is a guy who suffered through some really crappy times with the Jets, but he stuck by them. Then you go out of your way to humiliate and embarrass him like that so he can send a message? And now he doesn't want to stick by them. And I get that. I wouldn't want anybody to know that I played for the Jets if they did me like that. So, you know, this guy's walking around like, "Hey, hey, aren't you Jamal Adams? Hey, you're Jamal Adams from the Jets." Nope. Nope. Not me. Come on, man. You're Jamal Adams from the Jets. Of course you are. Nope. Nope. Not me. Not me. Jamal. Look, man. Check my Twitter bio. Check my Twitter feed. That's not me. Two games into the season, why don't we do a quick summary of how things are going for Adam Gase and Greg Williams? You lose the first two games of the season in extremely embarrassing fashion. Check. You lose your starting quarterback to the kissing disease. Check. There's an update on that, which I'll get to. You lose your backup quarterback to a gruesome leg injury. Check. You lose your Pro Bowl safety to an idiotic power move. Check. You let that idiotic power move be the basis for another idiotic distraction and controversy. Check. Good job. Great effort. Good job. Good effort, fellas. Good effort. How do you do that guy like that? Because he committed a couple of penalties? You're going to bench Jamal Adams.
Bench the salt.
In prime time. Meantime, Rick Cimini on Twitter tweets, "Regarding Darnold, Gase said it's the doctor's call. Quote, I mean, this is something that's serious. If his spleen bursts, then we have a problem." End quote. Hashtag Jets. All right, so breaking news. In his press conference today, the genius, the mastermind, Adam Gase, said of Darnold, quote, I mean, this is something that's serious. If his spleen bursts, then we have a problem. End quote. I'll tell you what, I was pretty tough on that guy yesterday. Crazy Eyes? I was tough on him yesterday, but you know what? I take it all back. I wasn't giving this guy enough credit. He is a mastermind, after all. Quote, if his spleen bursts, then we have a problem. If his spleen bursts, then we have a problem. That's an all-time take. Right there. Let me tell you something about this mastermind. When I hear this guy breaking down a spleen, bursting like that, man, I am back on the Gase train. If he realizes that an exploding spleen is, quote, a problem, then maybe he knew exactly what he was doing by benching his best player on national TV in a blowout for committing a penalty.
Bench the salt.
I take it back, Crazy Eyes. Man, you do know exactly what the hell you're doing. If our quarterback explodes his spleen, then we have a problem. Good take, coach. Good take. This reporter actually went to Leach and did this word for word. Quote, if you got all 12 mascots in the conference into a battle royale, which one would come out on top? You know, back in the day. Back in the day, somebody really fresh might say, hey, coach, if you got every coach in the conference together, who'd be the last coach standing? But this reporter thought, this is Mike Leach. Let's not bring that to him. Let's bring the mascot fight to him. Now, that is the kind of question that if you hit Nick Saban, for instance, with something like that, you're going to get your press credential ripped and shredded. But Mike Leach is not the dictator. Mike Leach is the pirate. The pirate lives for these kinds of animal kingdom hypotheticals. and before he went into his epic take on a 12 mascot Royal Rumble, he made sure to note his enthusiasm for the originality of the question.
That's a good question.
I like that one. That's a really good question. Glad you asked. Most coaches are not going to compliment your question when your question is, if you got all 12 mascots in the conference into a battle royale, which one's coming out on top? But again, most coaches are not the pirate. Most coaches cannot give 90 straight seconds of sound compelling enough for me to roll straight through on any football-related topic, much less a mascot-related topic. But this guy can, and I can justify rolling all 90 of it.
That's a good question. Well, first of all, what kind of mythical powers does a sun devil have? We got to consider that. You know, you'd have to get one of those Harry Potter activists to read up on how you kill a sun devil, because there's a lot of outside stuff there. I'm going to say the Wildcat's out. The Trojan, does he have a horse or is he on foot? Does he have a bow and arrow or just his sword? The Bruin, definitely formidable. Another bear up there at Cal. The tree, I imagine that tree's going to get chopped down. Unless we're going to go with the bird and somebody might get pecked or something. I don't know. And then the duck might lose interest and just fly away and get out of there, which may be good advice under the circumstances. The husky, no chance. The beaver, well, we'll see how long that beaver can hold his breath. The ute, again, we're back to, is he on horseback? Does he have a bow and arrow? Did he trade for a rifle? Because if that ute's got a rifle, there's some definite problems. Just as far as a beast alone, a buffalo's going to be pretty hard to tangle with. I mean, a buffalo's utterly outstanding. Well, but Butch is going to have to be clear-minded and crafty. I mean, Butch will find a way. There's no question. The Cougar will find a way. Clear-minded and crafty, a combination of stay out of harm's way and attack when you get your chances or your openings.
This was not this guy breaking down the opposition's defense or offense or his own offense. That's a dude breaking down mascots. Right now, I should do what's prudent and appropriate and thank the Pirates' parents for bringing the Pirate into everybody's lives. We really do not deserve this guy. Conversations like that one generally are reserved for, I don't know, acid trips at Burning Man.
Burning.
But we just got it from the head coach of the 19th-ranked program ahead of their first conference game of the season this weekend. Obviously, picking a favorite part from his take is impossible. So let me highlight very quickly a few. Like his use of the phrase, Harry Potter activists, when talking about how to kill a sun devil.
What kind of mythical powers does a sun devil have? We got to consider that. You know, you'd have to get one of those Harry Potter activists to read up on how you kill a sun devil, because there's a lot of outside stuff there.
All we can hope for right now is that an actual Harry Potter activist responds from the wizarding world of Hogwarts and tell Leech how to slay the demon of the desert. That'd be cool. You heard me chuckle. I love that part when he got to the Stanford Cardinal, wondering out loud if it would be represented by a cardinal tree or a cardinal bird.
The tree, I imagine that tree's going to get chopped down. Unless we're going to go with the bird and somebody might get pecked or something. I don't know.
Somebody might get pecked. You know, semantics aside, the mascot is a tree. We know this. It's not a bird. No one's getting pecked. So the Pirates still wondering how they're going to show up. We know they'll show up as a tree. So that means that somebody's not getting pecked, but somebody might get lumberjacked. His utter dismissal of the Husky, though, was really good.
The Husky, no chance.
Yeah, didn't even describe why. Just no chance. No chance. You heard him, UW. No chance. You're not even a factor. He doesn't even have to describe why you've got no chance. The guy spent more time on a tree and a duck than he did on the Husky dog.
The Husky, no chance.
And you know that's intentional, right? UW and Wazoo hate each other's guts. And that soundbite is probably sure to come back on heavy rotation all over local Washington sports radio in the week leading up to the Apple Cup in November. I said that picking a favorite part of that thing would be impossible, but if I had to, I have to go with his take on the Colorado mascot.
Just as far as the beast alone, a buffalo's going to be pretty hard to tangle with. I mean, a buffalo's utterly outstanding.
Utterly outstanding. Now, that's not the first time this guy's done this. We know that he's got a certain amount of fascination and reverence for the Colorado Buffalo mascot. This is nothing new. Here's Mike Leach from last year in talking about how much he respected and loved the Buffalo.
Their mascot is just outstanding, utterly outstanding. And then it's got the handlers. No, they're not pulling that buffalo. That buffalo's pulling them. I mean, you see these kids run beside these buffaloes or the buffalo, and sometimes they'll wipe out or whatever. You know, I grew up in the West. What can you say? I mean, buffalo, that's one that's hard to argue with unless you have a live grizzly bear out there or something. Yeah, it's pretty cool to watch, you know, part petting zoo, part football, although I don't know if Ralphie will let you pet him.
You can tell he's awed by Ralphie. He is awed by the buffalo. It's not outstanding, it's utterly outstanding. You can tell how much he respects that. The same dude who tracks raccoons on his snowy walks around Pullman has takes on house cats. The same guy who spent a minute and a half breaking down a hypothetical Pac-12 mascot Royal Rumble. And I couldn't love it any more than I do. It's so much better than that red-ass routine of a guy who pretends not to know when elections are, scolds his own fans for not wanting to hang out in 200-degree Alabama heat while the tide is hammering New Mexico State. Like, I would tell my guy Mike Leach to never change, but I don't need to.
Good night,